Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to Shop Talk Show. We have two excellent sponsors this week. Environments for Humans, who in Orlando, Florida, this February 17th through 19th, are doing their In Control Conference at incontrolconference.com. And Media Temple, my web hosting company of choice. Go to Media Temple. Actually, I made a short URL for it. bit.ly/mt-shoptalk if you want to like hook us up with the like, oh, obviously all this traffic is coming from Shop Talk, but we'll tell you more about both those things later in the show. For now, let's kick things off.
Hello, dear listener. You're listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show, a podcast all about front-end web design, development, sound effects, and more. I am Dave Rupert, and with me is Chris Coyer.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for listening to our show. And with us, we have Mr. Daniel Mall. Hey, Dan. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me. Yay.
Awesome. So let's, I mean, we got to do the, like, the Dan Mall life story quick. And, okay. Sure. So designer X, you even put this in your Twitter profile, famous places that Dan used to work. Happy Cog, big spaceship.
Yeah. You got
right?
it. Yeah.
Got it. And then was like, this ain't for me or whatever. I'm sure it was like an excellent parting or whatever, but now I have your own digs.
I do, and it was both of those places were excellent partings, and neither of them were not, this isn't for me. Both of them were sort of like, okay, I want to move to a new place with my wife, you know, that we've never lived.
Oh,
and
it was the other locational, one was like, largely.
Yeah, and the other one was like, I want to go have a kid and just be at home with my kid, so, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I still have friends at lots of those, at all of those places, and I consider them friends.
Is it a really requirement that you have to have an awesome name for the design studio that you work at?
I feel like that's, yes, absolutely.
It's like cheating.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like power name required, and then you just cruise through the bundle of applications for power names.
That's right. It's always in my offer letter, too. It's a rider that I put in there.
But like just a little more, if we would. What was it like? What is it like now? Or, I mean, what do you consider yourself? You know, what do you do?
Sure. So I've been really, really lucky and blessed to be able to work with a bunch of really, really great people. Like, I think every job I've ever had, I was surrounded by people that were like way, way better than I am at stuff, and people that I could learn from. So like when I was my first job, where I was an intern. I worked at a small studio right outside of Philadelphia, and the design team there was just like excellent. It was, you know, that's where I met Jason Santa Maria and Kevin Cornell and Rob Weikert and April Donovan and Andy Schulman and Chris Cashdollar and all these like awesome people working in the same place. And then from there I moved to another company in Philadelphia, and again, like super awesome people, and that's where we started a company called Pixelworthy, which was just a small web shop where we were doing, you know, fun work there, which eventually, you know, a lot of people from there kind of transitioned into opening the Happy Cog Philadelphia office. And then I moved to Big Spaceship. So, you know, that's sort of a whirlwind journey there. But every place that I've ever worked was a place where I was like, I really want to be, I think I described it to my wife, who was my girlfriend at the time. Like I said to her, I want to work at a place where I'm like a small fish in a big pond, you know, and yeah. where it's like a ton of opportunity. Cause I feel like if I was the big fish in a small pond, then I wouldn't really be learning very much. So I always tried to work at places that were really aspirational for me so that I could, you know, just really learn a ton and be inspired by the people that I work with and hopefully add something to the mix myself. So after doing all that stuff, that's when my wife and I had a daughter. This is about 2 years ago, and we decided to move back to Philadelphia to be closer to family, because we both have family in the area. And I was kind of bummed because I was like, well, I really like working at Big Spaceship and I really like all the jobs that I've had before. I don't know that I'm going to find another agency that like I just admire so much and really, you know, really want to work at. So this seems like a good time as any to try and start my own thing. And really the impetus for that was maybe I could just be at home as much as possible and just watch my kid grow up. So that was that's where Super Friendly came from, was like, let me just take a go at it and see how it goes. And so far, so good.
So far, so good. You won the best new agency of the year. So that's pretty good.
Yeah, I'm happy about that.
Ah, yay. That's awesome. And so, yeah. Everything does seem to be going good. You have I feel like when I still like get excited when I go to danielmall.com with the circles and stuff, but it must be a year old, but it's still, I remember when the redesign came out. Very beautiful.
Yeah, that's 2010, I think.
Was it really? I'm the worst. So, but still, it's still very lovely. Cool. And then, so danielmall.com, you're at danielmall on Twitter. You subscribe to the Chris Coyer technique of use your name for things.
You know, yeah.
I'm a fan of that. It's nice.
And, I don't do that. You have a podcast. Tell us a little bit about your podcast.
Sure. Yeah. So I have a podcast called The Businessology Show, and it's with my CPA, Jason Blummer, which is kind of a weird thing to have like a designer and a CPA on the same podcast. But, you know, one day we were talking and he just had this idea that he was like, you know, we both really like talking about the business of design. You know, I really love design. I love graphic design and visual design or whatever you want to call it. And I love all of those things. But I also think that that stuff doesn't exist in a vacuum. You know, like everywhere that design exists, there is a business component to it because it's for users. You know, design is for people. So I think whether you're selling it or whether you're just doing it for people, there's some sort of transaction to it. And that's something that we wanted to talk about because people don't often talk about that stuff. You know, I think we're one of the only industries that's fortunate enough to have conferences about what we do, where technically we share all of our secrets with our competitors, you know, which is super weird. But we do it and we have fun doing it. And we talk about like Photoshop workflows and development workflows. And, you know, we sort of tell people how we do things and we're pretty transparent as an industry, but that really doesn't happen a lot on the business side. You know, there weren't a lot of people that were talking about like how they write their contracts and, you know, how they bill for projects. And, you know, luckily we're seeing more and more of that now. And Jason and I just wanted to contribute to that. We wanted to kind of make things as transparent as possible and talk about different ways that people bill or different ways that, you know, you can write a contract or different ways, like what you do when a client is acting a little funny, like how do you conquer that? And we just wanted to talk about that and have an open dialogue about it. So we started the Businessology Show.
I like that you're pushing that forward too, because I feel like it might just be like random happenstance that this industry supports that kind of thing. And if we just keep the ball rolling, it's kind of a good thing. You know, I don't know if there's anything inherent about the business of design that encourages that kind of thing. It just so happens that a lot of cool people do it and then more people look up to that and then they grow up to do it. And it just so happens that the cycle has gone that way. And let's keep it up. Let's keep up the sharing, people.
I agree. Lovely. It's addicting too. You know, like one of the things that I've started to do with, you know, I started this when I first opened Super Friendly was we did a project with a client, a nonprofit called Reading is Fundamental, that was just an open redesign. It was like, let's design all of this in the open. And a lot of it was, Chris, actually from a post that you wrote that was saying, hey, let's do this. And so we pitched it to the client and the client was like, that's awesome. We've been wanting to do this for years. And we're like, really? And they were like, we can't wait to get started doing this. And I think since then, it's just sort of steamrolled every client, almost every client that we work with. We ask them if they want to do something in the open. And for me, it's like an addicting feeling because it adds more accountability to your process. You know, when you're doing everything in the open and people can sort of poke at it and make fun of you and ask you why you did stuff, you're sort of forced to be more articulate about the things that you do. So for me, it's sort of like a challenge to, if I can do this out in the open and still have people, you know, admire my work or respect the things that we're doing for the client, I think that's, you know, that's a better story to tell
like
at the end.
Grow double time.
Exactly.
Or something.
Yeah. So I love it. I can't kick the feeling.
Yeah, it's good. And that's kind of an age old thing, right? That like if you teach it, you learn it.
Yeah.
Extra better or whatever.
Exactly.
That's how the saying goes. Really rolls off the tongue. Right. Yeah. I think when I got interested in it was just a thought that had kind of been percolating in my mind about this idea of working in the open. It wasn't specifically about web stuff, although of course that's the natural continuation of it because that's what we do. But it was kind of based on the thought that like whenever you watch somebody doing it, regardless of what industry they're in, it's interesting. It's interesting to watch this old house, you know, yeah. And watch Norm rock it out on some wood and just like feel his passion for it. And even if you're like, don't even intend on ever owning a chisel, it's still interesting to watch. So like, but isn't that true of all professions? So exactly. I think the idea came from that.
Yeah. Sorry to cut you off. I think there's something to just like watching people who are really good at a thing do the thing that they're good at, you know, and we don't like, we do all that stuff within a building, but I think that's why like sports are so popular. You know, it's awesome to see like professional basketball players like exactly. do what they do well for an hour
their job.
And a half. Yeah. So I think the more we can do that, yeah, let's charge admission to watching people design.
Yeah, heck yeah. You know what? Oh, it's so interesting, too. And design is the most elusive of things to watch, too, because I feel like it's one thing to teach somebody how to salt a password, right? Because there's just like one right way to do it, kind of. I mean, I guess that's arguable, but you know what I mean? It's like the blog post tend towards that because it's safer, right? You can just mm-hmm. explain it, and assuming there's no like mistakes in your code, that's just the way it is. But like describing how you design is so much more elusive than that and like feels more dangerous kind of to do. There was actually there was one with Ryan Singer that did this kind of like behind the scenes kind of video thing that I watched that was so good because Ryan Singer he's a really good designer anyway, but he's really good at thinking about design and explaining his thought process on design. So the guy, the host of the show, I'll link it up in the thing, like presented him with a challenge that he hadn't ever heard of. So at the first time he's like, imagine you need to design an interface in which that you need to do X. And Ryan is like, oh, you know, and his mind just exploded and he's like, but why are we doing this? What is the reason that we would come to this page, and what's the page look like after we're done doing this task? Because if we can figure out the before and the after, the middle just kind of, you know, explains itself kind of stuff. And I was like, wow, this is such good stuff. You'd never hear people talking about this, at least not in that like video audio format.
I guess such anyway. A beast. I like Ryan.
Tim Smith from the East Wing. You guys
remember
Tim, but he is partnered with this guy. I'm going to murder his last name. I'm Garth DB on Twitter, but Breitbrecht. They started opensourcedesign.is, and it's kind of all about this. It's kind of about like bringing design into the like open source iteration, just working on it in the open kind of model. I thought it was relevant to what you guys are kind of talking about.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Because design is, you know, it's sometimes it's mysterious, but it's not always mysterious. When you, it's sometimes it's just like, okay, yeah, what does it need to do? What do I need to do to make that happen? And then, you know, but we kind of like wait till the launch day and then we're like, blah, check it out. It's a design, you know? And like, I don't know. It's just interesting to me just how design kind of is protected and not done in the open compared to things like development and stuff like that.
Exactly. And, you know, we should say that, you know, I was shelling praise on other people here, but Daniel practices this better than anybody. You should go to danielmall.com and click articles at the top. That your most recent one, some of your most recent work was being a part of the TechCrunch redesign, right? And you have a blog post here that just is like a epic timeline of what that work was like and super public about it. So do you have any kind of want to talk about that for a sec?
Yeah. You know, I think it goes back to kind of what you were saying earlier, which is like, if I can't explain it, you know, if I can't teach it, then I probably don't know what I'm doing well enough. And so, you know, what I've started to do is, before when I would do a project, I would like do the project. And then after the project, I would just try and reflect on it. And I'd be like, all right, what did I actually do? And then you just lose details. You like forget about stuff and there's stuff that slips through the cracks. And then there's stuff that you're like, oh, I don't want people to know about that. And so for the projects that I'm doing lately, and TechCrunch was one of them, I just actually started writing down while things were happening, what was happening. So yeah. I like actually kept the timeline in like a journal of notes as things were happening. It wasn't like I went back and reflected on it, so that by the time I was ready to publish the blog post, I had it already. I just needed to code it. And so like I tried doing that in a couple different ways. I have like a one is I had a private Twitter account that's just like my project log, and that just turned into like a vent fest. So I stopped doing that. And then I moved it over to, I used Notational Velocity, to take notes in. I just moved it over into there. So for every project, I have a new page that is that project. So I have a TechCrunch page. I had an Entertainment Weekly page. I had, you know, all the projects that I'm doing. And I just write down things that happened. Like, client said this to me. I don't know what to do about this. We went out for dinner. That was cool. I did 12 comps today. That sucked. You know, and I just like listed them all there. And then later on, you know, at the end of the project, I can just sort of publish that stuff. I mean, I did some light editing for sure, but, I find that really useful to me, like to not just reflect on it afterwards, but while you're in the moment,
it just makes
like
it more jot real it down. Too. Right. I mean, it's, I don't know. Like, that's nice that it's not just like a barfing out of what you felt like the last year was like. It's like a true account.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think there's something weird about not knowing what the outcome is going to be. You know, so like at the end of the project, you're like, oh, cool, that turned out all right. But when, you know, a client gives you a piece of feedback on a thing that you were really pumped about, and they're like, no, we hate it, it actually doesn't work for us. And you're like, oh, well, I don't know how this is going to play out. Like, am I going to get fired? Am I going to fire them? Are they not going to want to work with me anymore? Like, so like just being in that moment and writing down those things and going like, I don't know how this is going to play out, but I'm just going to write it down anyway, I think is a more truer sense of what went on.
Yeah, that's a good point. I wonder if there'd be a way to, I don't know, make that feel even more like true. Like there's a little link at the bottom of each one of these that like links to a scan of that page of notes.
Like,
so
like
there's
a Google
the eloquent
Translate.
Web text version. And then anyway, maybe it's too revealing.
You could do real world style video cam.
Like, yeah. Where you go into the closet and point the thing at your face.
Yep. And then you just cry.
That's not
they
a bad
didn't
idea.
Like my navigation.
Every design studio should have like a confessional in it. And you can just
yeah. This is great. This is the best TV show we've ever made, guys.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen. Like a good one. Okay. So just to, because we got to get into some Q&A soon. And there's some actually right here in the hot drama section. Dan participated in, or Dan was the designer of the Photoshop document that was the source of this year's CSS off. Is that, it's automatically funny?
Just the way you worded it. Dan is the designer of the...
Yeah, well,
I don't want to spoil the hot drama.
It's the point of the CSS off is that you get a PSD, right? A Photoshop document, and everybody get on a certain date and time, everybody gets to download it all at once. And then people, they don't exactly race. You have 2 weeks to finish it, but you code it up, you know, into HTML, CSS, and probably some JavaScript to create the final design, and then you submit it. And this year it was related to me in that I'm going to be helping judge it, and as well as you had to submit the design, the finished HTML, CSS, JavaScript through CodePen, which is a project I work on. And Dan was the designer of it. And I don't know, maybe intro that, I guess, Dan. Do you have any sure. kind of thoughts about what it was like to design it or how it kind of went down?
Yeah, sure. So I talked to Gene and the team at Unmatched Style. You know, he just sent me an email and said, hey, would you like to be the designer for CSS off this year. And I love CSS off. I haven't participated in it myself, but I'm always like sort of curious about it. So I follow along pretty closely every year. And so when he asked me to be the designer this year, I was pretty honored. And I asked him like, well, what do you want to get out of it? And he's like, really just make it a challenge for people. You know, that's the point of the thing. It's like, just test people's chops out. So I was like, all right, I'm going to come up with a design that I think is pretty difficult. You know, it's a design that I wouldn't know how to code. You know, I could try it, but like I try to design stuff that I don't know like exactly how it's going to be done, and just try to leave a couple of tricks in there for people to see what they can do. And so, you know, they didn't really have any requirements in the brief that they gave me. It was just sort of like, you know, do what you think is good and do what you think will fit in the criteria of the things that we want to judge, you know, responsiveness and how accurately they reflect a design and like all the things that are in the criteria. And I delivered a PSD that I think did all that stuff. And it was met with sort of, you know, half good reception and half not so good reception. I don't know if that's the hot drama that you want to get into.
It is a little bit, and it was for various reasons. Some of it was just like preposterous to me of the you know, like, this thing is just bad design. And I was like, okay. But they would point to things like along the left-hand column, there is like this like purple box and the text just kind of like falls out of it. And the purple background stops like in the middle of two lines. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that wasn't a mistake, guys. It's part of the like flair of the design. It's one of the challenges that Dan has set up for you. Try to figure out how to do that with CSS. It's not a mistake. It's not just bad design. And in fact, it's kind of an interesting design element because it draws your eye there because it's unusual and it breaks up the page in a weird way. And some people just don't get that. You know, they just kind of don't understand what was going on there and some of the things that were kind of hard for the sake of being hard. Mm-hmm. And people are like, where's my folder of assets? This would never happen at work. You know, you should have broken these bits off into different transparent PNGs. You know, you're like, it's the CSS off. This is how it goes down. And, you know, anyway, so I shouldn't have screamed. That's not what I would do in real life. And I wasn't, you know, I didn't, this is Gene's bag or whatever. But some of that stuff is like a, you know, a communication breakdown. Maybe next year we can learn from some of that and put, you know, just make it a little more clear what to expect from the page. Because, you know. Whatever. But some of the hot drama here, let me read one from Ryan Boone here. Dan, there was some recent hot drama about the CSS competition, specifically regarding the file type provided and the use of possibly copyrighted images in the PSD. What are your thoughts on offering a PSD with these, what could have been viable alternatives? In my opinion, a PSD is still one of the most efficient ways to present a mock-up of this complexity. Also, the layout you created poses a different sort of question. Why are you so evil?
Oh, that's the...
Dang!
Anyway, all right. We don't have to comment on the copyright unless that's true. How did that drama resolve itself? I imagine you didn't, like, just Google image search. Anyway, go ahead. You take it.
So, you know, a lot of this stuff I try to take with a grain of salt, too. You know, I think in general, if you're a designer that makes things that anyone will see, you got to have thick skin because it's going to be, you know, it's going to be critiqued and people aren't going to like it. And, you know, the thing is about design is a lot of it is subjective. You know, a lot of it is there's good design that people don't like and there's bad design that people like. So it's hard to say like things are inherently good or bad or good or evil or whatever. And so I try to take it all with a grain of salt. And a lot of that stuff doesn't really affect me too much. I try to listen to it and, you know, sure, my feelings get hurt every once in a while, but I've got pretty thick skin about that kind of stuff. I think that there's a bunch of stuff that I just didn't anticipate. I've never designed for a contest that like 6,000 people are going to participate in. So there's a bunch of stuff that I learned from it that, you know, that as I talked to Gene, he was like, yeah, we could implement this stuff next year. You know, one of those things is the file type. You know, I just sort of took for granted, you know, I've worked in Photoshop my whole life, my whole design career, I guess. And it didn't really occur to me. I haven't worked with any developers that don't really know how to get around in Photoshop or don't own Photoshop just because of my experience. So when people are like, hey, I can't open this file in GIMP, I'm like, I don't even know what GIMP is. Like, I've heard of it before, but I've never even opened the program. So I don't know what file types it supports. You know, I don't know what was what. And so part of it was that Gene asked me to create a PSD. That was the thing that was going to be distributed. So I made that. But if I were to do this next year, if I were to do it again, you know, I would see if there's multiple formats that I could distribute. You know, I think had I known that now, one of the challenges that maybe I would have given myself, even though it wasn't part of what Gene asked me to do, was maybe I would have just learned GIMP on this project. And maybe I would have like done a Photoshop version and a GIMP version. And I don't know Sketch, but maybe I would have learned Sketch too, you know, and like, here are three versions for you guys to check out. And of course, there's going to be people that complain about that. Like, well, what about my, you know, my fireworks file? And I'm like, well, you know, what about my freehand version? I can't really do anything about that, but maybe I would have, you know, one thing I could have done for sure is try to like look into those kinds of versions and see if I could provide that. As far as like the folder of assets and stuff goes, like I know there were a bunch of people sort of saying like, well, how do, like, where's my folder of images? Because I used a bunch of different blending modes, as I often do in Photoshop, and I didn't cut those specifically. When I'm working with a developer on a build, sometimes I'll cut them, because I know sometimes blending modes are really difficult to work with in Photoshop when you're not the designer who designed them. So, like, even if you're an experienced designer, it's hard to take a like, three blending mode layer and then cut the right image from that, you know? So, like, I would have done that, but part of it is just, like, it's a contest. So, you know, that's half of it, and the other half is everyone's going to build the file in a different way. So if I cut an image one way, that's not going to work for somebody else who wants to build it in a particular way. So that's kind of the reason that I shied back from, like, here's your folder of assets and images that you could use. You know, I think that, to me, that's part of the challenge. And then I guess the last part of that is the licensing part. You know, that's the thing that I didn't really spend much time on, which I should have. You know, that's definitely a big lesson for me, is to, like, you know, spend more time doing that. And one of the things that I should have done, I think, is create a text file of all of the images that I used and their sources. So whether they were, like, public domain, or if they were stock photos, or if they were, you know, whatever they are. So one, I definitely use stock photos, right? And that's something that I figured, well, I'm putting it in the design, and so you can use them. And people are like, well, if I want to make a Retina image, do I have to go buy that from the stock site? You know, and it was only a few bucks, but I think that makes a difference. You know, I think that's something that I should have considered, that, like, you know, I think I did it with some of the images in the Photoshop file, but not all, which is just, like, keep the largest sizes of those files in smart objects in that file, so that people can get to sort of a Retina.
Well, then you can't use GIMP, right?
Yeah, exactly. So now it's like, what's the trade off there? So I think, you know, the stock images, there's definitely, I think there's a solution to that, that I sort of did with some things, but maybe not all, which I could have done better. And then the other is, you know, because I thought this was a contest for fun, and I shouldn't have done this, right? But because it was a contest for fun, I was like, yeah, I could just use a Google image here and there, you know, and I'll just use that. And because it's not for profit, I should be fine. And that's totally my bad. That's something that I should have known better on that. And were I to do this again, I would definitely shy away from that stuff. So, you know, I try to take it as, like, what are the things that I can learn from this? And I'm sorry to everyone who it wasn't, like, a great thing for. And I think, you know, I'm happy that there are people that were like, hey, we love this. Like, it's a challenge. You know, I hate the design, but I'm eager to build it. Like, that, even that's a good sentiment to me. So I think, you know, it's sort of mixed reception there. And there's a ton that I could learn from, that if I were to do it again, I would definitely do a bunch of things differently.
Well, nice. I like all those sentiments, kind of the, you know, try to grow from it or whatever. I think you might be a little too hard on yourself, possibly, because it's like all those things were true. And I think maybe there's some clarity in the launch of it would help next time. I don't actually think that we should use GIMP. I think just because I it's weird, it's hard, it's like even weird to install. It's just not this great thing. And I think if we would just be like, oh, this is the Photoshop or GIMP competition, there would be just as much, or maybe make it GIMP only or something. There'd be way more people complaining about that and the difficulty of it than there would just instead of just like changing the tagline of the competition to just be like, it's a Photoshop to code competition, you know?
Right.
So just prepare yourselves. Don't even join it if you don't want to deal with the Photoshop thing. I feel like that was like the most amount of drama, is that it's this expensive software kind of thing. And you're like, yeah, it absolutely is. But it's also, you know, it's just like a, you know, an expensive set of wrenches is nice for somebody who fixes on cars. You know, it's like part of the set of tools that is part of the trade. Anyway, all good stuff there. I think the overwhelming sentiment for it was that it was fun and good, and it's fun. So it's not, I mean, it's not over yet. It's over in that if you're just hearing about it now, I'm afraid you'll have to wait till next year. But the judging here is going to be an ongoing thing for quite a while, where everybody kind of waits for the thing. And oh man, I don't know if you've seen anything at all, but I've seen little bits and pieces of some of the designs that are just like, what? Just amazing.
Nice. I
saw
seen
one
anything.
Of the, you know, the Dan used this kind of old timey photograph at the top of a kind of a young girl kind of in bed and the man looking out the window and stuff. And it's weird. And you wouldn't expect, you know, how I would have approached it this is the only one I haven't built. Actually, I've done every other year. I would have probably just cut it out and put it on the page, because that's how my brain would have gone there. But I saw one person who like cut out every little like person from it, and then like auto-filled, like Photoshopped behind the person. And then each person has a bit of like a movement to them. Like the old
that's
lady
awesome.
In the chair is kind of swaying back and forth, and the young woman Ooh. In the chair, they interpreted her as dying. So she, at some point she dies and like a ghost of her kind of comes up out of the top. And I'm like, you gotta be kidding. This is amazing.
Nice. Wow. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah. Well, that'll be
sick.
Good.
I think that's what it's all. It's about people having fun and getting back. That, I don't know. When we did the previous year and it was like a Double Dare themed one, people were like, oh, I can't use this on client websites. And you're just like, why would we give you a client website for free? It's not like freetemplates.com. Yeah, exactly. It's like, it's just a whatever. Have fun competition.
God, I would have like 20 bullet points trying to refute all of these points on the page next year. Be like, this is for fun. This is Photoshop. This is supposed to be hard. This is...
If you don't like fun or challenges, please, this is the wipeout of web development. You just need to deal with it. Anyway, all righty.
Enough. Let me do a sponsor. We have, for the first time ever, Media Temple on the show, which I think is really cool. It comes off of a little bit of hot drama a few weeks ago when they were purchased by GoDaddy. So I don't think they're certainly not trying to hide that. We're not trying to hide that. I know people have a variety of opinions about how that went down. We talked about it on the show with Scott Gell, I think, was when that came out. And I was kind of in a way defending the situation, but just because of some history I have with GoDaddy, where they did a lot of right by me and no wrongs ever really, other than, and you can, I have a post that went out after this. I'm not trying to say that everything GoDaddy has ever did is good news, and I'm happy to call out any things that they didn't do, but anyway, I guess I should just do the sponsor spot. Anyway, Media Temple, they're owned by GoDaddy now. Nothing has changed since that happened. I think they're an absolutely fantastic hosting company. I've used them for all of my sites since I was a web youngling. I don't know how I ended up choosing them in the early, early days, but it's been over 10 years now where I've every client site I've built, every site for a friend, all of my personal sites, just everything I do is on Media Temple. They're super good with support. The Shop Talk is on it, for example. They have this grid service, which I think is had a kind of rough start, but I think it's kind of a good service these days for something like a client site where you got to throw up WordPress on it, theme the site, do some kind of site that doesn't need to have like the most robust hosting ever. The grid service is super affordable for that. I think you can put like 100 sites on it for $20 a month. So it's their like lowest end, but still like pretty good hosting that has like this burst stuff. So if you happen to have a site that did like get on Hacker News one day, it's fine. It'll be fine. It scales up to handle those kind of bursts of traffic. And then what I most commonly use is their DV product, which is like a dedicated virtual server in which that it just has more juice to it. You know, you can, it has this little like piecemeal upgrade. You're like, I need more RAM and installed. You know, it's like kind of click a button to upgrade your server stuff, which I love. And then it gives you kind of shell access to it and access to Plesk, which is the like the GUI behind it, which you can kind of upgrade. Anyway, the URL for it, they gave us this long tracking URL, so I made a short URL for it, which is bit.ly/mt-shoptalk. Or just go to mediatemple.com and check out their hosting packages. I'm a big fan of them and their employees and their software and everything. Thanks for sponsoring the show, guys. Let's do a question.
Question from Russell Heimlich. This is actually kind of just a comment, so we'll breeze through it. But in defense of AMPPS... I'm using that sound effect a lot today. In episode 93, Rapid Fire 21, there's a question about MAMP versus AMPPS. I've been using AMPPS for over a year, and the only reason I considered it is it supports multiple hosts like MAMP Pro, but AMPPS is free.
Yeah.
So I can have site1.dev, site2.dev, site3.dev, and it's easy as pie to set up a new domain and database from the control panel.
That's probably a good place to stop on that one. I thought I'd follow up on it because it's AMPS is like the, I don't know, somebody mentioned it in a previous show and they're like, why would we switch to that? And I kind of went off on like, I don't know, MAMP Pro works fine for me and who cares? But he brings up a good point in that the big feature of MAMP Pro is the, like one click make new URLs that the free version of MAMP can't do, and AMPS can do that part for free. So I feel like that's the big thing, and it's cross-platform, so if you like have a Mac and Windows and stuff, you can use this one software on both places. So Russell, thanks for writing in about that. I thought that's a pretty valid reason to do.
Yeah, it also has an auto installer, which I don't think I was aware. And so, like, if you get a client or somebody's like, hey, can you fix this WordPress theme? You don't have to, like, go download WordPress or pull it from
that
a repo.
That scares me, though. That's why I kind of cut you up there. I guess I shouldn't have. But I was like, would you, like, I don't know, like, it, like where is it getting WordPress? And does it go get it from the most
probably
recent...
Probably from virus.com.
Yeah, see? Like, I would rather install it myself. It's not that difficult of a thing to do. Anyway, let's move on and do a real one.
All right. Bram Dahan writes in, for me, the link between you three, that's Dave, Chris, and Dan, is Dave's lettering.js that I used to kern some characters on the H1 title of Dan's CSS design for the CSS Huff competition hosted on Chris's CodePen. Ah, we're all together, guys. Yes, I would like to hear you guys rant about some different scenarios on how and or when and or why to use JavaScript on text typography, but don't seem to be able to agree with myself on how to frame this question.
Well, John wants to hear about lettering JS. Yeah, right. So maybe Dan could describe what he's talking about, the top part of the design.
Yeah, so I like to kern a lot. And that's not something that you can do easily in CSS. And it sort of took me a long time to get my head around the using JavaScript to augment CSS. But once I got there, I really like it. And I think, you know, patches to things like polyfills to things that don't exist right now are great until the thing exists and then you don't need them anymore. So like, I love lettering. I use lettering all the time. You know, one of my favorites was I used it on Crayola.com to make all the titles like different colors. And there's one thing that like sparkled and we use lettering for that. And it's awesome because it's one of those things we, you know, I wish existed in CSS, but it doesn't. And so lettering gets the job done. You know, so I think that's kind of how I see using JavaScript and CSS to augment CSS. Is there's some stuff that CSS can't do yet or maybe ever, and using JavaScript to fix that stuff I think is great, because at the end of the day, like, we're making stuff for people, and those people don't care how purist we are about stuff. You know, I think we are, you know, we are like, no, I will only use JavaScript to whatever, augment, and presentation in CSS should be in CSS alone. And that's great for us to have standards, but I think at the end of the day, like, if it makes something nice for the person using it, I'm all for using that. I may have just answered a different question, but that's where I'm stopped.
I think you nailed it. Chris, go ahead.
Well, what it does, this is Dave's invention, is it injects a span around every single letter. So Dan says he likes to kern. You can't really kern in CSS, at least not simply without like editing font files and stuff. You can't say the space between, an F and an L needs to be about half a pixel less than it is now. But you could do that just by using like some margin or relative positioning or whatever with if each letter was wrapped in a span. So Dave's simple idea, as is Dave's wheelhouse, is to he made a little span injector. So you select that word with jQuery and it goes through each letter and wraps it in a span. And so now you can kern with it. I guess maybe I would have Dave explain why that's a little dangerous.
Yeah. So just full disclaimer here, like, lettering has some pretty big accessibility implications because screen readers stop at every span they encounter, and you can't fix it. That is to say, it's an awful experience. Like, it'll read out every single letter as it's going around, like as it's traveling through the DOM or a headline or whatever. So awful, awful experience for screen readers. So I'm currently working on making a branch to where it will duplicate the DOM node and then it'll like wrap it in an ARIA hidden and stuff like that. So it'll work and have a fallback. But man, it is just kind of like, it's depressing that you can't like provide a simple fallback. You have to like duplicate a DOM node. Anyway.
Is that out? Are you going to make that part of the thing?
I think it's going to be the default, and it's maybe something that you can turn off. I don't know, because it's tough. There are SEO implications too. Like, if you have two H1s of the same H1, you know,
but display none should work, right? Or no?
Yeah. Well, you can't do the visually hidden style.
Which is which you would still be penalized for theoretically because it's not really hidden. Oh, yeah, that's tough, dude. Too bad there's not like ARIA SEO ignore. I don't
know. Yeah, ARIA actually just read this instead. Or ARIA
duplicate.
Don't pause on this element would be really
cool. Oh, then you would just be all set because that's the whole problem is that the span causes the pause.
Yeah, yeah. And so, yeah. So anyway, that's it. But don't like a fix is coming, so don't worry. We'll figure it out. But yeah, you use JavaScript when like CSS can't do it. And a lot of people in the chat room are saying like, "Oh, what about letter spacing? You can just use the letter spacing." But you can't like the third letter is messed up. You know how sometimes you have like an I and then it has like the space for 15 eyes right next to out to the right of it for some reason is really weird, but that's what happened when the typographer or the font designer made it. So you're just like, ah, I love this font, but I can't deal with that. So you like, boom, just kind of inject something. But, you know, but there are like, you know, if you're wrapping stuff in spans, you know, like you're creating DOM nodes, you're creating memory issues for your phones and stuff like that. You might get some scroll jank and blah, blah, blah. So that's something to consider. I steer clear if you can. That's kind of my deal.
I want to get at least a few more questions in. So just so we don't run up until the end, I want to do one more sponsor real quick. So it's the incontrolconference.com. That's the URL. You'll be redirected to 2014, that incontrolconference.com. We do have a coupon code for it. It is ShopTalk for $100 off of the price of the conference. It's already, I would consider not too expensive of a conference. Anyway, it's in person down in Orlando. It's going to be beautiful and surely kind of warm and nice if you need an escape. It's at a nice hotel. Dave's going to be there. Brad Frost, Tim Cadlec, Estelle Weil. People that you've recognized from the show on before. So if you use that coupon code, it makes it like you were on the ball, and it makes it the early bird price again, or it takes it down to that level. So check it out. It's one of my favorite conferences of the year. So incontrolconference.com. Jason Crane says that Dan asked about on Twitter the other day, like for recommendations of their favorite hybrid designer / developer. So Jason was kind of wondering how that panned out and who some of Dan's favorite are, what the good recommendations were, and maybe why you asked at all.
Oh boy. Well, it was for a secret thing that I'm thinking about doing. I guess I could talk about it.
I'm not going to twist your arm, but maybe I will a little bit.
Well,
oh my.
The reason that I was asking for it is I'm thinking about, and man, I guess this is, you know, this is like designing in the open, right? I'm being accountable for it. I'm thinking about starting a new podcast that is going to be a critique podcast. So it'll be like talking about design and development and stuff, but also have a big portion of it. And maybe the whole thing is just like submit a bunch of sites and we'll get people that are really good at critiquing to critique them, you know? So like the point is you get to hear a little bit of like how designers talk about designs and intelligently. And I'm not, you know, I don't have the details around that yet, but I'm sort of thinking about that. And one of the things that I was thinking about was like who could co-host it or even just host it. Like I might not even be on it at all. I'd like maybe set it up for some people and have them do it. And maybe it's just like all guests all the time. But who could host it that could speak to both design and development? Because what I don't want is like, okay, one person talk about design and the other person doesn't know anything about it. And then the other person talk about development and the other person doesn't know anything about that. Like I want there to be a dialogue. So I was asking about that just to see. So, man, maybe now I'm on the hook to make it because I just said it in public.
I'm surprised it doesn't exist.
Me too. Mostly, yeah.
Because I'm like, you know, like, I guess that's what all good ideas feel like, though, right? You're like, wow, what a cool thing. Oh, I think development might be a little hard because you can't, you know, you can certainly peek at the JavaScript and CSS and stuff, but it would be hard to kind of understand what made the underneath. So I would think a lot of it would be like UX too. You should get, cause that, I mean, that's something that can clearly be critiqued just by what you're looking at.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I'm hoping there's going to be like small things even in development, like where you could say like, check out the optimized images on this site. Like that makes a big difference. Or look at what they did in like this like medium size view. Like that's a really nice touch, you know? So maybe there's something there or even like, check out the way that they wrote this JavaScript function. That's something that we've never seen before. You know, so it could be something like that.
Yeah, I like how all of your ideas are positive things. Yeah, I feel like it would be people would watch for the hot drama of like, they screwed up.
No, I don't think it would be a bashing show. Because we'd get too many entries. Like there are a lot of sites that suck, you know, honestly. There are less so, I think, that are awesome. And I think it's good to talk about that stuff. It's easy to find really bad sites. It's a little bit harder, I think, to find nice sites, and then even harder than that to figure out what is nice about those sites. So I think something that highlights that, whether it's a site or a blog or a podcast or a video show, or I don't even know what it would be, but that's kind of what I was asking that question for. I just wanted to see like who are some of the people that potentially could co-host it with me, like that I may just not even be thinking about. I've got a handful of favorites that I haven't talked to about this, but I think there are people that are really good at doing both of those things that could be cool.
That's great. Very cool. Yeah, so I guess we will leave them unnamed just so we wouldn't want to break the news to them over a podcast that they...
Yeah, exactly.
I think we could, Chris. No, that's a really cool idea. I'm very interested. Maybe we should become podcast producers, Dan, because I want a podcast that talks about podcasts.
Yeah. I know you really do want that though, right?
I really do. And I thought like maybe I should start that. And then I'm like, I don't want to start another podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
There are already enough.
Have my own idea too that I think is really good that I'm not going to tell you about because I'm not as ballsy as Dan is about saying things that I may or may not do. But I agree. It's like, I don't know, if we had all the time in the world, huh?
Just produce and find the right people to host it and stuff like that.
We already have a sound person, you know, we already have the infrastructure for it. And still it seems overwhelming.
Yeah. And then how do you, this is businessology. This is businessology, Dan.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, how do we pay for people on a podcaster's budget?
Oh boy.
Let's see. Let's do a few more questions if we can. Can I pick one? How about Andrew Threadgill writes in, sometimes I miss the old days. It used to be testing the latest IE, testing some of the older IDs, pop open Firefox, Netscape, and then you were done testing. And you would tweak for the browser issues, but that's it. Now it seems like the possibilities are endless when it comes to devices, browsers, TVs, and such. Even using responsive design, items just render differently sometimes. My question is, how much testing in compatibility is enough? Should we just stick to the five big browsers on desktops and maybe Android browsers and Safari on mobile? Where does the madness end? What do you think? What do you test on these days, Dan? Do you have like a target set that you go for? Does it depend on the project? Does it depend on what you have available? How do you do it?
I think it depends. I certainly don't have a large testing suite with me. And oftentimes I'm actually working with developers that do. So I just sort of go like, okay, this is part of your job. It totally depends on the project. If I'm doing a project that's like a Chrome experiment, you know, then obviously Chrome is a thing. But then there are also ones that are sort of on that scale, which is like they want people who are modern and technological, and that's like part of the audience. So for me to test on like Mosaic, you know, is not going to be fruitful. So I think I think there's a point on each project where it's good enough, and I think that changes from project to project. But maybe one of the things that I would suggest is along the lines of a performance budget is that right up front, you define whether it's in your contract with a client or if it's a side project, like you just define it for yourself. You just put like a good enough point somewhere and you say like, this is going to be good. And then if somebody comes back to you with a bug, then you spot check it, right? It's like, well, I have a bug on a BlackBerry thing. All right, well, I'll fix that thing. And then that's good enough. So I think, you could spend all day, every day, testing until things are perfect. But I think there are better things to spend time on. You know, something that's two pixels off, it's not worth it to spend time on that as opposed to like implementing a feature that will make your company money. So I think it depends, and you just got to define that good enough point.
That's a good point. And it really does depend, because a two pixel thing, clearly not a big deal, right? The website's absolutely fine. It might look a little bit weird, but then there's things like, well, let's say it's some kind of a web app you're working on and you need to upload things. And so you decide that, well, HTML5 has drag and drop in a file API. So we'll just implement it that way. And you just, if you want to upload a file, you just drag it on and it uploads and it works in like modern Chrome and a few other things. But it's like, it's like completely unacceptable that you went so modern on that thing that it doesn't work on like a swath of other browsers. That's a bigger problem, you know? So this kind of like having deciding which things absolutely need to work is kind of a thing, and then just little tiny the 2 pixel off stuff can kind of I don't know, you know what I mean? I just feel like we should talk in specifics sometimes about these things, because
I'm falling in love with the idea that I only support browsers two versions back, like the current version and the previous version. But like, if you need something else, like explicitly tell me, you know, because it's a lot more effort, you know. There's things like Android, like you could get the latest Android, the brand new Nexus 5 or something like that, and like it's going to have Chrome or whatever on it, but like, you know, test on that, see how that feels, how it works, and just know that things get exponentially worse as you go back in time. So that's just kind of the frame of reference you have to have. Things start falling apart. There's features that you were thinking about depending on, but then suddenly they don't work. And so you just kind of have to learn the hard way about web development, is you just kind of have to learn like, oh yeah, query selector all is not a thing for mm-hmm. browsers older than 2 years. So I guess I'll have to figure that out. So,
I like
that's, you know, that's my thing. It's like, assume two browsers back and then ask if the client or whoever or yourself, like, does this really need more?
Yeah. You should look. If it's literally client work, you should look at the phone in their pocket and write it down.
Yeah.
That's what they're going to look at.
That's true. And then you can pick up like the latest devices. I don't know. For under $1,000, maybe you could get a pretty good suite of little test devices, maybe.
God, I almost freaking bought I have a Nexus 7 for my, like a 7-inch tablet, which I bought on purpose because it was not extremely expensive and I wanted a real Android tablet to test on. So I have it, but it's just such a piece of junk. I can hardly get it to turn on sometimes, but I generally can. And then, you know, that's what I have. And I bought it specifically because Android and cheap.
Mm-hmm. Well, and sometimes if you go to like Android meetups or like events at South By or whatever, they'll just give you devices. It's just ridiculous. They'll just, here's a computer for your pocket. Oh, okay. I don't know.
Let's end with this one from Andrew Volozahane. That was probably a messed it up. I've been trying a couple of CSS and JavaScript frameworks lately, Bourbon and Neat and Foundation, and I'm struggling to choose which better suits my purposes. I'm using BEM for CSS, which is that block element modifier style, which is a kind of a way to name your classes. And I'm a big fan of using semantic classes, so classes with meaning. The problem is that it doesn't work well with Foundation. So the way he likes to name classes doesn't jive with Foundation. For example, it applies a lot of default styles to elements, and I have to turn off Foundation styles, which leaves me with mixins. And I write my own styles from the ground. It's okay, but I'm worried that I'm rewriting so many of the styles that it's just kind of not worth it. I've tried Neat and Bourbon and it works better, but I miss the widgets and the Foundation or the mixins from Foundation. What do you suggest? Basically is kind of where that ends. And so Andrew's in this position where I think he's trying different frameworks to try and fit one that like kind of fits his coding personality, but is yet to find a perfect situation. What would we suggest for him? Do you use Foundation? Do you do anything other than kind of code from scratch, Dan?
No, pretty much code from scratch. I mean, I've tried Foundation and Bootstrap and like all, you know, all the frameworks out there. Not all, but you know, I try to at least look at them and test them out. And the thing that I keep coming back to is like, there's not one thing that solves it for me because I have different problems than Zurb had when they were making Foundation. So I think like when people come out with frameworks, it solves the problem for them. And it probably comes from the fact that they've had these same problems a bunch of times again, like over and over again. So they can use that and go like, okay, this solves that problem that we don't have to deal with ever again. And I think everyone has sort of different problems like that. So for me, I've always sort of like picked and choose from that picked and chosen from each of the different frameworks and go like, oh, I really like this thing and I really like this thing. And then I'll make my own sort of Transformer Voltron framework, you know, like that seems to be the solution for me. So before I was doing responsive sites, you know, I had my own framework that was like, I like a little bit of this and a little bit of this. And this is the way that I want to do image replacement. And this is the way I want to do, you know, hiding things off screen. And then I could just apply that stuff. And so I think, you know, like make your own thing because you're the one who knows what problems you solve over and over and over again. And chances are, you know, if you're working on that variety of projects, Foundation isn't going to be exactly right for you, or neither is Bootstrap, or neither is, you know, whatever else is out there. So like find the things that you like from those things and then you know, and just like piece them together, collage them, you know, take a mix in from Bootstrap, take a mix in from Foundation, take a you know, from 960 or whatever, 320 and up, like build all those things yourself. And then you'll have the thing that you use and then you can keep adding to that. I find it really like this is like a thing that I see happen all the time is people go like, well, I can't exactly use Bootstrap because I like it for 90%, 95% of the things, but it doesn't solve this other 5%. So just, you know, use that 95%.
Yeah. Why is that so elusive for people? Do you think that they're unwilling to do that? Do they think that they are then ruining Bootstrap and they think of Bootstrap as this dependency that they need to like keep upgraded? So if they alter it, like, you know, don't alter WordPress core, because if you do that, then you won't be able to upgrade it, or an upgrade will overwrite something that's useful to you. Do you think that's where that comes from? I find it weird. I feel like that's the obvious solution is to piece things together, which I'm glad you said, but I wonder why that feels elusive.
I mean, I think using a framework comes with a cost. It's like when you pay for something, you expect it to be awesome because you paid for it. And I think even though like those frameworks are free, there's a cost to downloading it, learning it, and then implementing it. And I think when people use those things, they're like, well, I technically paid for this, you know, in time to learn it. So why doesn't this solve all the things for me? Because I paid, you know, I like put effort into this. So why isn't it all things to me? Why doesn't it solve all of my problems? You know, for that same amount of time, you could have built your own framework. But I put the time in to invest in using this thing, and now it sucks. You know, so like, like software works that way for me, where I'm like, all right, I'm going to download whatever. I don't mean to pick on software, but like Aperture, right? It's a great program. I like learned it, I bought it, and I just don't like it. So now I'm frustrated because I'm like, well, I paid money for it, and I wanted it to be awesome, and now it just feels like a waste. So like it's a little bit of a weird parallel though, but I think like free frameworks still have the same thing. There's a cost to it, and so you want it to be better for you, even though
it's not.
Yeah,
and I suppose
always.
You don't see it in the same way that you don't see the like you know C code underneath Aperture. Some people might use these things in such a way where they just kind of link up the dependency and then use it, whereas they don't maybe aren't consciously thinking that it's just exactly the same kind of code that you're going to be writing just one tab over, you know.
I come from the Dave Rupert school of thought of like tiny little custom bootstraps for every client.
Yeah.
There you go. I was just going to say, like, I just went through this project. I was going to like mock something up for a client. And I was like, I'm just going to use Foundation because it's out there and I don't want to build all these things. It's just like a quick stub out. So I'm going to do it. And I tried Foundation. And then I was just like, I don't like Foundation. I mean, it's Zurb is awesome. And Foundation is really like super like customizable and do everything. But it was just like, there were just a few things that broke it for me. And I was just like, oh, I cannot, I like this, I can't use. So now I need to figure out, I guess, how I'll do it in my code. And maybe I'll look at what Foundation did in their little thing. Like I was specifically like their off canvas thing. I was like, they have a really good off canvas menu. So maybe I'm going to look at how they're doing it and see if I can grift some of that. So that was, yeah. So like there are things like about this, but that's kind of the beauty of all this open source stuff is like you can in HTML, you can just view source and grab the parts you like and that's yours. So, he mentioned Bourbon and Neat. Bourbon and Neat, they're like, Bourbon's like a compass thing. It's just a package. It's a library of functions for your SaaS project. And then Neat is just a it's a grid maker. That's all it does is it makes grids. So like you can make your own grid however you want in whatever fashion you want. And I am totally on the Neat Bourbon train right now. I love Compass and all it's gotten me through a lot of different times in my life.
Does neat depend on bourbon or not? Or can you use just neat by itself?
I think neat maybe depends on bourbon.
It's too bad because I'm like off of the – because bourbon does, as far as I know, nothing other than includes for CSS3 stuff for the most part. I think it probably has a couple little add-on-y thingies. But
yeah,
it's mostly
like clear fixy kind of thing,
right? But it's still largely a CSS3 thing. And I'm like, I think the whole world needs to get on the auto prefixer thing, and just author as if there was no such thing as prefixes, and let the auto prefixer thing just figure it out and prefix it for you instead of explicitly asking for vendor prefixes. It's really a good way to go, and it makes way smarter choices. You don't have to depend on the library updating. It does it with live data and stuff. It's really, really definitely the best way to do vendor prefixing. So I'd like to get off of things like bourbon and even Compass. And Compass is like kind of admitted that this is the case and is going to be doing its prefixing based on the same live data that Auto Prefixer is doing. But still, that's fine if you want to use that. I think it's a good move for Compass, but I think that they should even get off of the having to explicitly call a mix-in. I think it should just do it. It's the best practice. Just do it without having to write include. Just write transform 0.2 seconds ease and have the build process add whatever is necessary. Anyway.
So you are coding in a more just straight SAS manner than using any kind of framework or library to help you.
Well, that's not entirely true. I mean, some of my projects they're just on Compass because I haven't figured out a good way to incorporate to, you know, cause you gotta spend a day stripping all that stuff out. And I haven't gotten there yet. But I am on auto prefixer for some of my important projects. And I feel like this is definitely the way to go. So I would just wish we could get off some of the explicitly calling a mix in for CSS3 stuff and onto using SAS for its more syntactical sugar.
That's fair. Yeah. That's fair. I agree.
I'm with it.
Okay. So let's do the wrap up, I guess. We're a little over
You're a little over time. Dan Mall, thank you so much for coming onto the show. We really appreciate it.
A pleasure. Thanks.
For those who aren't following you already, how do they follow you? And then what's one thing you'd like to plug or promote, and how can people give you money?
Oh boy. My website is danielmall.com. On Twitter, I'm Daniel Mall as well. Not the as well part, just Daniel Mall. And what do I want to plug? I'm going to open a school soon. So look for that. And I'm making a product next year. So look for that.
Whoa.
What? Those are huge things.
Well,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Boom.
Awesome.
School and product. Can't wait. Want to hear more. All right. Well, thanks everyone for listening, coming out into the chat room. We really appreciate it. Thank you for downloading us in your podcatcher of choice. We really appreciate that. And be sure to rate us up while you're at it and tell your friends, hey, listen to Shop Talk Buds. Do that. And Chris, do you have anything else you'd like to add?
ShopTalkShow.com.